overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week. Have a beautiful week.
I invite you to enter into this heart space with me this Sunday morning. In a very simple sort of way. Today we're speaking about simplicity, and so I've been courting the simplest way of being. I reflected back on my childhood when my mother would walk me to school, and she would have my twin sister on one side and myself on the other, and we would stop at a busy street, and she would tell us to stop, look and listen. And at a young age, I found myself able to navigate what seemed to be a dangerous scenario just by stopping, looking both ways, and then listening to that voice within that said, it's okay, and then taking that journey across the busy street. And so today, at age 72, I'm still practicing the stopping. To stop a narrative, perhaps, at this stage of life, knowing that the narrative spins me out, and oftentimes a story of oppression or a story of anger, resentment, bitterness, whatever that, and there's a lot of it going on the planet right now. So I'm stopping telling the story. I'm stopping making everything about me, because in truth there really is no me. There is only the one life. And when everything is about me, that's when I can find myself seeing myself as separate from the world and being in reaction. But when I let go of the I that has the issue, that I'm free again, I stop the projecting into the future. When I live in the future, I can't be in the present moment. And so I stop and I look within. I stop looking without and I look within. And underneath the thought patterns, I find a field of awareness. I hear Pema Chodron saying to me, we are the sky and everything else is the weather. And so when I stop identifying with the weather, whether it's turbulent or cloudy or dark or rainy, metaphorically, I can know I am that spacious context in which it all arises. And so as we listen to this inner guidance system, we're looking through new eyes. As that young lady said in the beautiful inaugural poem, when I am brave enough to see the world with new eyes, then maybe I can be brave enough to be what is required in this world. And so everything has the potential to awaken that still small voice within us in the simplest things. In the musical The Wiz, there's a lyric to the song Home. It says, suddenly the raindrops that fall have a meaning. Could the clouds in the sky show us something? A young man was showing me these beautiful clouds that were filling up the sky with the sunlight behind the cloud, lighting it up from within. Could we stop long enough to witness that? I was sharing at our revealing service that J. Allen Boone, a modern-day mystic who wrote the beautiful book Strongheart, the story of a dog, and how the dog changed his life. And in this story that he narrates, he tells of a time when he was very disconnected, and he was puling and whining about everything in life. And he walked out in nature and he was sitting on a log and complaining and worrying and judging. And all of a sudden, a bird sat down next to him and started to sing. And in a holy instant, he stopped his thoughts. And he looked at this bird filled with song. And he began to listen to her beautiful melody. And after a period of time, the bird flew away. And he commented, "She never turned around to look at the gift that her song brought to me." So what if in that little story, we are invited to stop whatever it is that's creating the unnecessary suffering in our lives, and to look at things differently? Could I look into the darkness and not run away from it? And by my ability to look at the very thing that I seem to be resisting, I can listen to that still small voice that says there is a gift in here for you if I don't resist it. And so we are at this very sacred time on our planet where we are asked to be brave, where we are asked to see the greater good and calling it forth. We are asked to only speak well of ourselves, which might be socially unacceptable, but is spiritually mandatory. When we speak well of ourselves, we are inviting good and God into our lives. So instead of judging ourselves and the world as some kind of problem to be fixed, we see the world with new eyes. In our class that we're teaching on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, they talk about love can only exist once we've had a conversion. And a conversion is where there's no longer me struggling in my self-constructed idea, the dream of my life. And when we fall into that true nature, the God nature, well then love flows without attachment, without projection, without expectation, because true love does not cast its judgments and its projections. That's conditional love, and that's not love. And so, by our willingness to show up here and have this conversion, we realize that we're only one life, God's life, and that's our life. It's as simple as that. And it's like taking off the garb of the me person. We're no longer the clouds, we become the sky itself. We're no longer the simple wave on the ocean, we become the ocean as the wave. And in that conversion, love awakens within us, a love that has equanimity, a love that loves all as its own self, whether it's a little octopus in the ocean, whether it's a weed by the garden wall, whether it's the old oak tree that's barely alive but still creates the shade. It's all the one life, revealing herself anew, and we bow to it. I honor you, I respect you, I love you. You are my own self. And in this acknowledgement, through the simplicity of that awareness, we come home. And the paradox is that we're already home. But we arrive there in this holy instant with every breath, and we see it as if for the first time. When you're ready to come and play, in a simple sort of way, I invite you to open your eyes, put your hands across your heart, feel that ineffable connection at the core of your being that's always there for you. It has never abandoned you or forsaken you. And so the invitation is to not do that to yourself or to the world, because we need you. So thank you. Yeah, open your hands, open your eyes. Jesus said it, he said it, and a child shall lead them. He was talking metaphorically. He was saying when we are young at heart, when we have the beginner's mind and the beginner's heart, then we have the capacity to step into a whole new world. And that's the theme for this month and this year. And I think it's appropriate after the inauguration that we're stepping into a whole new mood in our country. someone was reflecting on what happened this week at our inauguration, and I thought so beautifully, they said a new mood was established in our country. It wasn't the mood of, I'm going to get even with you, you stole an election, you're all bad and you're good, and that. None of that rhetoric was there anymore. There was a rhetoric of coming together in the language of the soul, the language of compassion to help one another, the language of mercy to serve one another, the language of deepest acceptance to be grateful for it. You know, I am happy and glad that we're having a whole new administration in our country. Isn't that nice to see? I am happy and glad that our environment is important again. I am happy and glad that we're getting shots and that we're having some kind of initiative that we can all get vaccinated. I am happy and glad that we've joined the World Health Organization. I am happy and glad that that we're safe masking and we have 100 days where we're going to wear masks. And I only take it off to do this little anomaly, and then back on goes my sweet little mask. I carry them with me wherever I go. You know, I have little jackets and vests everywhere, and usually when you put on one of my jackets and you pull it out of the coat closet, you can find poop bags in each pocket. Now you find poop bags in one pocket and masks in the other. And you know, you have to be prepared. I was a Boy Scout as well. So life is really simple if you let it be simple, or it can be very complicated if you want it to be complicated. So one of the simple things that Emerson taught me was, he said, be and not seen. In other words, it doesn't matter how you appear in the world, but it matters who you are in the world. And then he says, let us acquiesce. It's time to let go of the past, to let go of our story, to let go of our whining and complaining, to let go of our projections onto other people, our judgment, to let all that go. He says, to let go of your bloated nothingness, this was his phrase. And then, once you do that, you connect with the divine circuits. Now, what that implies to me, written 200 years ago, is that those divine circuits are already there, but it requires that I be the true self that I know myself to be. Not the egoic mind that has the programming and the conditioning. And all this spiritual work that I've done in these 72 years of my life have taken to the simple realization that I'm not really separate from you. That there's only one here, and I'm it, and so are you. You know, there's a beautiful phrase in Islam. It says, La ilaha illallah, means that there is nothing but Allah. So it's all Allah. It's all God. And we are that by its very nature. So when we know ourselves at that, then what would your life look like if you knew that you were the unfoldment of the divine presence as a Sagittarius or as a Pisces or as a... you know, all of that's just a game. And we play this game called life, and we think we're doing it successfully. When I was a young man, observing my own evolution, and Eckhart Tolle talks about we must evolve or die. And when I was a young person, like so many, I wanted to be a somebody. And I wanted a degree so that I would have a title and be important and make a good living and have a nice home and have a relationship and all the things that the somebodies have, until I realized that I was externalizing everything. I had an external God. I had an external idea of what love looked like. And all that had to fall apart. When I was a freshman in college, I was in a musical called Sweet Charity. And it was kind of symbolic of my own life. It was about a young woman in New York City. She was a dancer. She worked in a dance hall. And she kept wanting to find somebody out there to love me. Will somebody love me at last? And so, just like her, I was looking for love in all the wrong places. And then she had this idea where she realized that she had that divine discontent. And there's a one big dance number in the middle of the musical where she sings, there's got to be something better than this. There's got to be something better to do. And when I find me something better to do, I'm going to get up and live it. And so she set this intention to have a better form of life, only to realize that it was all predicated on the external life that would make it better. And so as the universe would have it, her life just fell apart. She got dumped by her boyfriend. Not only did he dump her, but he stole her pocketbook and pushed her off the bridge in Central Park. I mean, this is the kind of relationships Charity Hope Valentine had. And at the end of the musical, after going from one man to the next, and the last man dumps her because he says she's not a moral woman because she works in a dance hall, and he was a nice Christian man, so he dumps Charity. And at the end of the musical, after having been through all of this, and I'm 19 and I'm a chorus boy in this musical, she goes out on stage and she sings this song, where am I going and what will I find? What's in this grab bag that I call my mind? What am I doing alone on the shelf? Ain't it a shame? but there's no one to blame but myself. Which way to turn when you've lost your way year after year? She says, do I keep falling in love for just the kick of it, staggering through the thin and thick of it? Know what I am? I'm good and sick of it. I run to the Bronx or Washington Square, and no matter where I run, I meet myself there. So this is her conversion. Looking inside me, what do I see? Anger and hope and doubt. What am I all about? Where am I going? You tell me. And the musical ends there. She ends having ripped herself apart, having everything collapsed, and something new is emerging. I feel like our country's kind of there. Where are we going? You tell me. But what she did come to realize is that she can't run away from herself. No matter where I run, I meet myself there. So could we start meeting ourselves, whatever that is? Find out what's in there. I'm basing this fourth of five talks on this little book called Simplicity by Richard Rohr. You know, he's written like 20-some books, Raoul. I mean, I'll die and never having read all of his books. But in this little book on simplicity, at the end of it, he talks about those kind of moments like Charity Hope Valentine had that turned her life around. And he references Carl Jung. Now, Carl Jung was a famous psychologist who did not believe in religion, did not believe in the opiate of the people, what she called. But he did believe that by going deeply into the unconscious, we could make it conscious. That's what Charity said. I run to the Bronx and Washington Square, and looking inside me, she made the unconscious conscious. So here's how he puts this beautiful Franciscan monk. He says, Carl Jung, as an old man, one of his disciples asked him, what has your pilgrimage really been in this lifetime? To which Carl Jung answered, my journey consisted in climbing down 10,000 ladders within my own self. 10,000 ladders, so that now at the end of my life, I can extend the hand of friendship to this little cloud of earth that I am. And then he uses the word humus, which means earth, and it comes the root word human. So we're made out of earth, and we're made out of stardust. And so here's his little conclusion. We are earth that has come to consciousness, or unconsciousness waking up. And he says, if we discover this power in ourselves and know that we are God's creatures, that we come from God and we return to God, well, that's enough. Because all there is God. La ilaha illallah. It's all God, right? He says, you can't grasp this with your mind or with logic. He says, you have to experience it directly in yourself by going on the journey yourself and walking the path of your making. So the simple truth is that you got to discover it for yourself. It's got to be a direct experience. It can't be a concept from some other way. It can't get any simpler than that. You know, embrace this life that you've been given, and then what is this life showing you? You know, that's the great teacher within. You know, when I was in New York City years later, I'm in my 20s now at the same stage, and I'm still looking outside myself for my good, my relationships and everything, and I found a piece of sheet music, and that sheet music said there, you can't get loving where there ain't any love, like you can't get honey where there ain't any bees. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I realized that I was looking for love in a place that I couldn't find it. It had to be found from within, direct experience. And that was the journey of self-love. And that's not an egoic thing to say self-love, to love the self within the self. My Zen calendar this morning was Pema Chodron. And she says, when you can love yourself, then you can let that love ripple out into the world. It first has to start with this, and then it ripples out. So could we experiment with that in this great thing that's called our life, the life that we've been given, in a simple sort of way? I started off that opening prayer with the idea of stop, look, and listen. And it's things like that. So ask yourself, ask your little child, how do you align yourself to this new consciousness that's evolving through us? This month, we're talking about a whole new world, and this new world happens when there's a new consciousness. It has to be the new heaven within that creates the new world. So it's this emerging sense of belonging. You can see it now in our country. And I want to talk about that beautiful symbolism that we went through at our inauguration later. The first week I talked about the flowering of human consciousness. That's in you and me. We no longer abide by what we've been taught, what we've been told. And so much of learning is an unlearning. You know, we were taught that we were born in sin, that Jesus died for our sins. What if all of that was just a story, that you were born in wholeness? And so you begin to, in this flowering of human consciousness, you begin to see things with new eyes. And that all these threads of truth have come to awaken within each one of us a realization of our belonging to the universe. And then the language of the soul is a language of belonging. It's a language of yearning. It's a language of compassion. It's a language of gratitude. You begin to give thanks for everything, especially the things that are uncomfortable, because they were the earthquakes that moved you forward in life. Does that sound counterintuitive, to be grateful for the very thing that created the collapse in a marriage, let's say, but that took you to yourself? To be grateful to be fired from your first job because the job was killing you, and to show you that you didn't need that job to define you, that you could find something that your soul would resonate with? So when life gives you these 2x4s, it's life's simple way of saying it's time for a change. You know, in the Buddhists, they talk about the 5 noble truths, and one of the great noble truths is the noble truth of impermanence. And basically that says change, life is about change. And if you have a difficult time with change, well, then you're not in line with the truths of the universe. The truth is that life is about change. And so we have this little chant, I am safe, it's only change. Doors closing, doors opening, doors closing, doors I'm opening. I am safe, it's only change. We're going through an awful lot of change in our country. Could we open to that in the truth of impermanence? Another one of the great noble truths is the truth of unnecessary suffering. You know, pain is a given. We're going to have pain in this life. Our husbands are going to die. Our dogs are going to get run over by a car. That's the pain of life. But the suffering is when you hold on to it. And so in Buddhism, one of the great noble truths is it's unnecessary to live in a place of suffering. Huh. Then you can be cautiously optimistic, you know, cautiously hopeful, like Gene and I are, that sometimes things have to get really dark before they get light. My Zen calendar yesterday was so powerful that I've been reading it to myself over and over again. It's Helen Luke. And she says, the true light never hides the darkness, but is born out of the very center of that darkness. And it is transforming and it is redeeming. So to the darkness we must return, she says. Each of us individually accepting his ignorance and his loneliness, his sin and his weakness. Sin meaning missing the mark, being disconnected to source. And most difficult of all, consenting to wait in the darkness and even to love the waiting. To love the waiting in the darkness. We're in a dark time in our country. You know, we have white supremacy that's out there. We have people with guns. We have people, I was walking in Costco the day of the inauguration, it was Wednesday morning, and I saw this young man storming through Costco with his mask on, and he was saying, we lost our democracy today. We lost our democracy today. And I went, okay, oh shit, I thought we got our democracy today. So you see, 2 different ways of seeing the world. And so could we be okay in this darkness and not run away from it, knowing that we're navigating the best we can? And as that young lady said, could we be brave enough to bring the light? I printed off her her poem, and it was like 5 pages long, and I'm not going to read it to you. The one at the inauguration, this beautiful 22-year-old young lady, but it's the very end of it that really hit home for me. So this is what she said at the very end of it. She says, we will rebuild and reconcile and recover, and every known nook of our nation and every corner called our country, our people diverse and beautiful, will emerge. We will emerge battered and yet beautiful. And when day comes, we step out of the shade, or we can say the darkness, aflame and unafraid. In other words, we're bringing our light from that darkness. And then she says, this new dawn blooms as we free it, for there is always light. And then the last 2 lines is, if only we're brave enough to see it, and if only we're brave enough to be it. This is the light that's coming out of the darkness if we can be patient to wait long enough while we go through these dark times. Anybody been through dark times here in the center? Oh, good. So you know what I mean. You know, and we get through those dark times because the light's right there in the midst of the darkness. It's not separate from it. So yeah, so there's this opportunity then to reframe life and see it in a different way and to know that there are gifts that we can claim. I pulled out my little book by John O'Donohue called Beauty, and he speaks from the soul, from the language of the soul. And at the very, very end of the book, he talks about the gifts that life gives us. And it's these gifts that come out of these kind of dark, troubled places that have the pearl. And so this is how he puts it in his own poetic Irish sort of way. He says, we forget that the darkness of the unknown within us is also the fecund soil urgent with seeds of new possibility. Don't you love that? The fecund soil, fertile with seeds of possibility. So he's saying, we're creating out of this consciousness of having been through this troubled times, and in the midst of that fecund soil of our own conversion, this gift will be found. So he says, the beauty of the gift is the secret way it awakens. It awakens us to growth. And without altering our anxiety or forcing confrontation, this gift has placed us on the path of change almost before we realize it. It says we have to change. We have to evolve or die, as Eckhart Tolle say. We're in very troubled times, and it asks us to have a new order of spirituality, a new order of seeing each other, to not run away from the darkness within ourselves first, so that we can meet the darkness outside when it confronts us at Costco, running down the aisle screaming, we've lost our democracy. Could I not turn away from that voice, but be present with it and have a conversation with it? Jesus had it many a time. Like a parent to the soul, he says, this gift carries us carefully over torn ground until our feet stand free in the serene place where we can recognize that we have been blessed. We come to the end and we say, oh my God, there's got to be something better than this, and then we find that something better. It's a new order of being. Could we be brave enough to see it and be brave enough to be it? So he goes on to say, every life is blessed with a different sequence of gifts. You might want to reflect on your long-lived life and look at those sequence of gifts. In our class, Richard Rohr says, the beloved comes as an earthquake. So the more earthquakes you have, you might say, the more you're letting God into your life. God's an earthquake. Shakes things up. Often the gift arrives secretly, and you only find it later on. Or perhaps you're looking back over time as you would look through an old drawer, and you come upon something that you had put away years ago. Because of Adam helping me clean out my basement, I'm finding all these remnants of my past that I had forgotten. And yesterday I was listening to Kennedy Schultz, my teacher. Judy was there. He spoke at the old center. It was his last talk before he had the brain tumor and died. And in listening to him over 20 years ago, I was realizing he was speaking to my heart in a fresh sort of way. And I had myself laughing and crying with this fresh man who's no longer on the planet, but who's still here in my heart. You know, and he had to reach rock bottom. He said his conversion happened. He was an alcoholic, and he was a drunk. And he said, when he got sober, he said, I'll go back to church. And he says, that was a big mistake. He went back to the Catholic Church, and it wasn't there. He said, well, I'll try the Protestant Church. Went there. It wasn't there. Then he said, I'll get a hobby. So he started refinishing furniture. And he said, I'm a man who can't even put a hammer, a nail in a board, and I'm refinishing furniture. And he says, so I'm trying to find something, some purpose in life. And when he's stuck in his apartment in New York City, he hears Raymond Charles Barker speaking on the radio at Alice Tully Hall. And he was hearing the voice of truth within him through this catalyst, and it was the gift of his conversion, the gift of his awakening. And then he became the teacher of teachers. He was my teacher, and I guess I'm your teacher. So you see, it happens in the strangest sort of ways, these gifts. But he would say, you know, anybody who was an alcoholic, he'd say, get sober first, then come to the center. Don't think you can come to the center first and then get sober. That was his mantra. Or perhaps you're looking back over your time, and you rediscover the gift, and you enter again into the wonder of that. You know, I realized he was speaking hardcore religious science, and I love that. Raymond Charles Barker said, always speak well of yourself. And he says, this is socially unacceptable in the world, but he said it's spiritually imperative. When you speak well of yourself, you're speaking well of yourself to yourself. You're affirming that the God of me, the peace of me, the love of me, is big enough to embrace all the darkness in the world. That's speaking well of yourself. And then he said, Raymond would say, you must love everyone in this world. And then in his true, inimitable, sarcastic fashion, he says, some you love from the front, and some you love from the back. Let those who have ears to hear. And so sometimes you can love them better by letting them go from your life, and sometimes you love them more by taking them in and knowing that you are the resonating field. And so the simplicity of truth is, when you establish what Raymond Charles Barker would call the fashioning factor, when you are it, you literally attract like-minded people or like-souled people. We've all come here because we're drawn toward the same light of truth. If you were drawn toward the Baptist truth, you'd be at the Baptist Center and singing hymns to Jesus. But if you want a different kind of spirituality, one that requires that you take full responsibility for who you are and who you choose to define yourself as, then it requires a more expansive truth that's all-inclusive. He concludes by saying this. This is one of the lovely capacities of memory. The reawakening of a new blessing through the rediscovery of old gifts in forgotten corners. The rediscovery of old gifts in forgotten corners. I've been going through my library here at the center and my millions of books at home, and it's like finding an old friend, because like I found the book of Henry David Thoreau's on simplicity, and I'm speaking about simplicity. And Henry David Thoreau said, attachments can be too much of a requirement for me to take care of them. So he lived in Walden Pond, and he lived very sparsely. He had one chair, he had a rug, probably had one mug to drink out of. Someone wanted to give him an extra chair, and he says, no, thank you. I might have to take my time, which is my most valued possession, and have a conversation with somebody, and I really prefer to live the simple life of the austere monk by myself. And so he may have taken it to an extreme, but he recognized that by living in the world of somebody's and attachments, you get possessed by all of that. So what if we could allow those teachers from the past to become teachers in this present moment awareness? His last sentence is, the reawakening of a new blessing through the rediscovery of the old gifts in the forgotten corners of our lives, it is this prospect that animates faith. That animates faith. That everything is here to show us, to point us to a deeper sense of who we are, if we could but listen. So yeah, so could we make this thing that we do here really, really simple, in a practical sort of way? Reflecting on that inauguration, you know, a lot of change needs to happen right now. And the tone of the country is to allow it to unfold through participation with each other. And there's a call to action. And I loved how Joe Biden expressed it to all these people that he's enlisting to help with this, to be this new vision that he's seeing, one of mercy and compassion, and one of gratitude and happiness and service. And he said, I want people who find from their gut something that they care about. You know, there's three levels of awakening. There's the awakening at the level of the mind, which is relatively easy. You don't exist, your thoughts aren't real. You know, that's the easiest level of awakening. The second level is the awakening of the heart that says they're all your children and that it's all sentient beings. And that if you do it to the least of these, you've done it to me. That's an awakening at the heart. But the third is the hardest level. That's the awakening at the gut. That's the awakening of the me that thinks you're separate from the other. And he says, this is where it needs to start, according to Joe Biden. What do you care about in your gut? I'm married to a man who loves trees. I think he's going to leave all his money to trees and the environment. He's not so fond of people. But that's good. So he's got this thing about caring for this planet, caring for the environment, and then it moves into his heart. So we donate to all these Sierra Club and the Save the Planet and the whales and the bears and the wolves and because his heart's involved. And then what that does, then it goes into the mind where the narrative can be expressed from this felt sense of belonging and service. So the invitation would be, what are you passionate about? Could you open your heart to that very thing? Al goes up to Chattanooga and he swims with the sharks in the big tanks, and he's like a rock star in Chattanooga. He's cleaning the tanks because he cares enough about this. Otherwise, he wouldn't be doing that long drive, because I'm sure they don't pay you anything, do they, Al? Not a penny. So he's doing it because he cares. So what is it in your own simple way that you could say, I can bring this to the game of life? You know, Mary was talking about being a nurse, how maybe she could help with the injections. It's just an idea, and an idea, as Raymond Charles Barker would say, since I listened to him yesterday through Kennedy Schultz, he would say, an idea belongs to the one who takes it. Terry has this vision of having her own pottery studio. An idea belongs to the one who takes it. So what if those pottery studios are just waiting for her, and you have to be ready? This is the simplicity of the spiritual path. It says, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Are you ready? Are you ready for a greater order of being in your life? Are you ready to see a new sense of belonging? Are you ready to step through the gates of freedom? It's very interesting. The gates of freedom, I was studying this Buddhist stuff. The gates of freedom, the first gate of freedom is to let go of your story. If you're caught up in your story, you're not free. You're caught up in the story of or what they done me wrong, or whatever the story is. You know the stories. You've heard a lot of it. We all have a story. And the greatest thing, we have a story, but the story's here to liberate you from the story. So you're free when you no longer need that to define what you are. The second gate of freedom is the freedom that there's no I. There's a Zen saying that says, you know why you're so miserable? Because 99.9% of the things you talk about are all about you, and you're not. So the second freedom is to let go of the I person. The third freedom is to let go of any idea of planning for the future. The future is an illusion. The future unfolds from your quality involvement in the moment, period. And so the fourth gateway to freedom is to leap into that moment. All we have is this moment. You know, that's the whole symbol of the cross. It's the vertical reality of eternal now moment cutting through time, space, reality. There's a past, there's a future, and both of them are illusory. But this is always happening. And that's so, you want to get simple? Let's go right to the breath. The breath is always in the moment. And we don't even give the breath and receive the breath. We allow the breath. The breath is given to us. And so what if every breath, every exhalation could be a simple letting go? Letting go of whatever thought, whatever emotion, or just letting it be. And then notice what's there. Once you let go of the thought, once you let go of the emotion, there's this awareness that's there. Is it that simple, David? Yeah, it's that simple. You mean all I need to do is exhale? Yeah. Exhale. Notice it for yourself. There's emptiness there. There's awareness there. There's love there. There's peace there. Let the breath breathe in. You determine how deep or shallow it is, but then the exhale is just letting go. Letting go of whatever. Whatever thought, whatever emotion, whatever plan, whatever future dream, whatever anxiety, whatever fear. Enough. And there it is. Emptiness dancing, peace unfolding, love abiding, awareness, a full awareness that isn't thought. Have you ever noticed that you're the awareness, you're the sky, you're not the clouds? You're the awareness that's always there. Even your little girl, she has that full awareness. She doesn't have the complicated mind that her mother has, right? But she will be acculturated and programmed like we all are, and then we'll get caught up in habitual ways of thinking. We'll think, this makes me happy, this makes me sad, this makes me successful, this makes me a failure, and we'll be caught up in this narrative, which is the story, and we can't be free when we're in the story. Sam Breedman was the best guy at putting down stories. He was a breakout artist. When I met him, this beautiful man, I came to Huntsville, it was like a soul connection, and his spirit was free, and mine was trying to be put into a cage, and he reminded me that it's the free bird that flies. I was telling in the revealing service, I listened to this train, I saw this documentary, it was called The Parrots of Telegraph Hill, and it was very moving, if you get a chance to see it, because I used to live in San Francisco, and I know Telegraph Hill very well, and after I moved to Huntsville, that's when I saw the documentary. So when I went out to Asilomar, and Trey and I were staying in San Francisco, we went up to Telegraph Hill to see if we could find these wild herds, flocks of green parrots that were in Telegraph Hill. And we're looking around, we're listening, and all of a sudden I hear the birds in the trees. And we're looking up, and there are these green parrots, and we're having communion with them. You know, just how could we have lived there so long and not seen it? But in the documentary, there's this little man, he considers himself a musician, but he could not make any money at the musician, so he lived in a shack on Telegraph Hill. Someone let him live in the shack, and he had his cigarettes and his guitar, and he had his bird seed. And these wild parrots would come down, and some filmmaker made this documentary about him with his parrots. And the red-headed parrots, they were green in their bodies, the red-headed parrots started relating to one another, and they were finding mates, and it was really interesting to watch them mate. But there was one blue-headed parrot, and the red-headed parrots didn't like him. And so what was interesting, he found another blue-headed parrot. But this blue-headed parrot was in a cage. It wasn't wild like the flocks. So they brought this blue-headed parrot in the cage with the wild blue-headed parrot, whose name was Connor. And they fell in love with one another. Now, the only problem was they were both male parrots. Hmm. Now, I said, I don't have a problem with that, do you? But the problem wasn't that they were both male. The problem was the one in the cage wanted the wild one in the cage, and the one that was free wanted the one in the cage to be free. And no matter what they did, they couldn't put them together. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. So are you the bird in the cage? Or are you the bird that's free? This is all a metaphor for the soul. And you know, the soul by its very nature wants to be free. So then we get to play the metaphor, what is the cage that we feel we can't get out of, that so defines us, you know? And you can answer that for yourself. You know, it might be the cage of your religion. But then if you're like Terry, imagine no religion, I wonder if you can, and you step out of the cage of organized religion, and guess what? You're a spiritual being. You just don't have the cage of your religion. Huh. So what if we define what this life is supposed to look like by the simple way of what we declare to be true for ourselves? In the science of mind, they teach you about how you create your own reality. And this goes way back to Hermes Trismegistus, 2000 BC, as within, so without, as above, so below, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So what are you thinking about yourself? What are you putting out into the universe? The words in your mouth, a blessing or a curse, says Moses, according to how you use it. So are you affirming the beauty, the peace of you, the awareness of you, the grace of you, the mercy of you, the compassion of you, the belonging of you, the longing of you? Or are you identifying with the judgments of you, and the worries of you, and the fears of you, and the history of you, and the future, that if I get so-and-so, maybe then I'll be happy. And then you live in someday aisle. Someday I'll be happy because I'll find the right place to live, and I'll get out of Alabama. Well, what if I told you that happiness is right here in Alabama? That the light is right there in the midst of the darkness, that you don't have to go anywhere, and you don't have to do anything. Is it that simple? It's that simple. There's nothing to do. Even the idea of you being the doer is illusory. There's something, and next week, the last talk of this 5-week series is going to be living in grace. What if it's been grace all along? This something that's greater than you that moves through you. That young lady wrote her poem, and I found a little poem by Mark Nepo that I think is much more succinct. It's not 5 pages long. It's like 2 stanzas long. But he says essentially the same thing, and in a way that's a call for each of us in a simple way to do what our heart tells us to do. And this is his little poem at the end of this big book. Trey wants me to get rid of my books, and I thought, what would I have if I got rid of all my books? I'd be free. Oh gosh, I can't consider that idea. So this is called Take the Next Step, and take it without knowing where you're going. This is for you, Shannon, and for you, little Jake. He says, nothing is easy, but to tell the truth of what I see and feel, this somehow cleanses my eye and it becomes clear what to do. When I get see clearly what is mine to do, he says, because I don't want things to change. I don't admit that they already have changed. And then I feel like a wheel of life is tearing me apart. Oh my God, I didn't want the change, but I'm in the midst of change. Holy cow. And then the last little stanza is, the greatest power we have when we feel powerless is to admit what is already true. You know, I love Marcus Aurelius, who said, find that deep place of peace within yourself and then admit what's true. See what's true in life. He's saying the same thing. He says, then the stepping stones of eternity rise out of the mud and they show us where to go. The greatest power we have when feeling powerless is to admit what is already true, that we are powerless over what's going on in so many ways. But he says, then the stepping stones of eternity rise out of the mud and they show us where to go. Is it that simple? Yeah, it's that simple. Out of the mud, the lotus grows. Out of the darkness, the light shines. Out of the contraction, the expansion comes. Out of the letting go, the discovery happens. Once we let go of what we think is the right way, there's a whole new way that emerges. Could we be open to that new way on this planet? When I saw at the inauguration Lady Gaga walk out in that red dress, and she sang, and the weather rockets, red blare, bell bombs, bursting in air, gave truth through the night that our flag was still there. And as she's singing and the flags are all blowing down there at Patriot Square, wherever it is in Washington, tears are coming down my eyes because I realize we're stepping into a whole new energy of possibility and of hope. Could it be that simple? It's like turning the page in a book. This ended and this new life is emerging. I think it's that simple. Could we be a part of the emerging evolution? So let me do a little closing meditation so that we can find those stepping stones that appear out of the mud in our lives. And the first thing to do is to enter into the mud. We're all standing in the mud. It's called America. And we're standing in it, but we're looking up at the stars in the sky. And we're seeing hope and possibility awaken within the hearts of humanity. I'm hearing the kindness being expressed and about helping the children at the border, and I'm hearing people wanting to serve. And there was a great call in the inauguration, a great call for all of us to act and to do what is ours to help. And so in this spirit, in this mood of compassion and mercy and cooperation and gratitude, and through this beautiful spiritual truth of uncertainty, impermanence, we step into the change in our own hearts, and we invite for that change. So feel into that. I am open and receptive. What is our capacity to be an instrument of mercy? What is our capacity to be an instrument of compassion? What is our capacity to remember a kinder, gentler time when we serve one another? What is our capacity to make all things new? A new way of being, a new way of seeing in our lives. And as we say yes to this life, 1,000 times yes, is it that simple? Yeah, it's that simple. To say yes to what life has brought us, and yet see it as a part of the transformation. As John O'Donohue would say, there's a gift in everything. And by our willingness to look deeply, we find it. Or as Emma Curtis Hopkins would say, this too is good, and this too is of God, and I demand to see the blessing. And so as we make a demand on the universe, like we're doing right now, we can see the blessing, we can see the good, and we can call it forth. In our satsang on Wednesday night, I invited everyone to plant a seed into the soil of consciousness and to declare it as already so, a seed of potential, a possibility, a seed of an emerging new consciousness. And when we see it and we declare it, we actually can manifest it in the world. And so I am seeing a kinder, gentler country born out of the hearts of humanity, and that we come together as one nation under God again, supporting liberty and justice for all people, of all colors, of all races and all religions. This is the new order of being that I'm seeing and I'm willing to be. We take this as our sacred trust that each one of us is called to be. If you're willing to step out in courage, trusting in this beautiful grace-filled life, put your hands over your heart with me. And from that deep well within you, say, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
You are the deepest aspect of myself.
The beloved within me bows to the beloved within you.
The beloved within me bows to the beloved within you.
In this spaciousness, we are one.
In this spaciousness, we are one.
And all is that. And we're here for each other. And let your light shine, even though it might appear very dark. And have fun. Remember to smile behind your masks. Be safe. And have cultivate a sense of humor. That's the greatest one of all. Be able to laugh. So thank you. Masks on.
For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You are love and you are light. Namaste. Yeah, yeah.